Listen in to the Community Connection Show with Alan Collier every Wednesday from midday to 2pm, where local community groups let you know what's happening right here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. And being the first Wednesday of the month, we have our private eye with us, Peter. Welcome, Peter.
Welcome, Alan. Thank you for having me.
No worries. I forgot that it's absolute. I don't want to get it wrong today. It's from Absolute
Facts, F-A-C-T-S.
Yeah, that's it. I wasn't sure because I know one time I had it wrong. I didn't want to get it wrong again. Peter, when we had you along last month, we sent you away with some bit of homework, and we were talking about retail shrinkage, and you were going to do some work on it for us, please.
Yep, I've done some homework for you, and although I must say it, seems to be quite a reluctance to put up recent data. I'm not sure whether that's COVID pandemic related or whether people don't want to tell you what the real numbers are. But look, in general terms, to set a benchmark, my understanding is normal retail shrinkage, which should run between about 1% to 5%. That'd be of turnover, of course.
Gee, if it's a big company, that's still a lot of money, isn't it?
Yes, and I knew you were going to ask me for an example. So, and my anticipated sample was a big green box hardware type store. And their revenue was up in 2021 by 12.5%, as probably everybody knows.
Yep.
Which meant their turnover was $16.9 billion.
Gee whiz.
Which is quite impressive.
Some of my money's in there, I can tell you too, Peter.
Exactly.
And probably and yours.
Guilty as well. So let's say their shrinkage was 2%, and I don't know that for a fact, but let's just assume it's 2%. That would be $338 million per annum.
Just in shrinkage?
In shrinkage. So that's theft, broken items, returns that can't be used, and yeah, breakage and things like that. So let's assume it's $338 million. Their net earnings were $2.18 billion. So by my calculations, 15% of their earnings disappear in shrinkage.
Gee, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, please, I'm not quoting official figures or anything. I'm just putting in indications.
Yep.
And again, with the that there are stats out there, but they're no recent updates. But in Victoria, for argument's sake, stealing from retailers between 2015 and 2019. Remained fairly stable between sort of 20,000 to 25,000 incidents. But I don't know how reliable that figure might be. But it's a general indication. There wasn't, I think you were angling towards whether there'd been a spike.
Yes, yeah, we're asking that. Yep.
All I can say is up until 2019, it sort of sat in a range. Whether I don't have any accurate figures or no one's prepared to provide any figures since 2019. So, in all honesty, I can't answer the question.
No, that's fair enough. It was just, we did have that question. Somebody raised the question that maybe there wasn't as many sales staff, that maybe that had caused a spike or something. It was just somebody asked the question. I always like to try and answer their questions.
Yeah, look, I can't give you an honest answer because I haven't been able to get anyone to give me an answer.
No, that's fair enough.
But again, like with all the shrinkage, the major focus is always on targeting repeat offenders. So, you know, the odd whatever goes on here and there, they're not too worried about. It's the repeat offenders that in basic terms, make a living out of relieving retail stores of their items.
So, Peter, I know that you're involved in retail shrinkage, and that's one of the reasons why we asked the question. So are you saying that the majority of them aren't just, say, Mr. and Mrs. who walk into a shop, see something there, and for some stupid reason put their pocket work out, that there's more retail shrinkage through people who actually try to make a living out of doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I would suspect that, you know, the loss people working in loss prevention or profit protection, as they call it these days, they're more concerned about the repeat offenders. So people that are in their store every day or every second day, relieving them of, you know, I don't know, $100, $400, $1,000, $2,000 worth of product. And unfortunately, I suspect a lot of that gets spent on drugs, unfortunately.
Yep.
So there's a stat here saying that retail reported shoplifting spiked 16% in 2 years to a retail value of $3.37 billion. That's in Australia, but unfortunately that's 2017-2018 financial year, and I wasn't able to find any more recent data.
Gee, that's so amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, so the cost of, if you work on, say, $3.5 billion is the cost to the economy, I guess.
And I guess we're paying that, aren't we?
Well, that was the thing that came back the other way. It eventually washes through into to the prices you pay.
Yep.
And, of course, the stores, you know, it affects their profit and shareholder profit down the track. So it's definitely something that from a retail perspective or any commerce perspective, you certainly got to keep your finger on the pulse because you don't want numbers blowing out. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Peter, somebody told me, and I'll ask you this because you'd know it, I didn't. Someone just mentioned it to me, that when somebody's apprehended, we'll say in the big green box, and I don't want to say that because it's not fair, because we're then picking on someone. But if the police are called, that they like to march the person out through the shop handcuffed as a bit of a deterrent, do you know whether that's true or not, or is that just an old wives' tale?
Look, I think what happens is normal process would be that an employee or more preferably a licensed prevention officer would apprehend someone. Generally, I suspect they'd be taken to a private area, perhaps a manager's office, and they would be interviewed there. More often than not, I suspect police will be called. More often than not, police will actually turn up in reasonable time. And then it's over to them, and it really is. It's a cross-section of how interested they are or how concerned they are about what's happened. They'll have the presumably would have the items that were attempted to be stolen sitting on the desk there. There's a reasonable chance that person may well be already known to police, and they may even be looking for them for other reasons or perhaps the same reason. In other words, there could be warrants already out for that particular person. And then if that's the case, yeah, I guess the walk of shame, as you'd probably call it, would take place, which would also be quite a good preventative measure for people that are watching that occur. That to have someone marched out by police in handcuffs is a bit of a deterrent in itself.
Well, I was going to say, those of us that aren't crooks and don't do it, you see them walking through and think, oh, God, I'd hate that to be in that situation. So I was just wondering that maybe they do that on purpose just in case somebody's half tempted.
Yeah, I would have thought it'd be more necessity than on purpose. But, yeah, it certainly happens.
Yeah. Peter, you were saying that and I think we might have discussed this before, you were just saying that an operative or a store detective would be more likely the person would grab these people. Do they have to let them get out the front door?
Yes. So that, you know, you have to have crossed the threshold, whatever the threshold might be. You have to leave the store, yes.
Because otherwise, even if they've put it in the pocket and you've got a fair chance, they're going to walk out the door with it. They've still got every right to say, I know I meant to pay for that, don't they, unless you let them get off the premises.
Yeah, look, in the case of shop theft, that's definite, but I was actually reading something, which is something I'm aware of as well, is that there's a lot of other forms of fraud which could include return fraud. So people turn up to return items And they may well have gone into the store first and collected those items to then return them. So if you're aware of that, then you perhaps you'd apprehend them at the point of them trying to make the return.
It's unbelievable, some of these crooks, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's where obviously CCTV, which is clearly getting better and better with technology and clearer identification, that's where that's becoming, you know, very, very important.
I'm with Peter from Absolute Facts. We're talking about some mind-boggling things, and we've been talking about, I call it shoplifting, and Peter calls it retail shrinkage. But, Peter, I know you've done a bit of work on burglars too and what they're more likely to steal.
Yeah, so there was some articles and some data came out about what burglars are most want to steal if they get into your house. Hopefully you're not home when they get into your house, but yep. Number one, of course, is cash. You'd expect that to be the case.
Yep.
Number two was actually car keys, which was an interesting one. So there's a lot of still apparently a fair bit of car theft that takes place, that they're in the house and they access perhaps the spare set of keys sitting up on the hook there, and your car disappears with the keys, makes it a lot easier to steal.
Peter, do you think part of that is because cars have become more sophisticated to get into?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They're a lot harder to break into these days, although there's still little tricks for probably every model car, and your local RACV guy in his yellow van probably knows of any of those.
He knows them all.
He knows them all. But yeah, look, in theory, they're certainly a lot harder to get into, and with the electronic components as well. So if you don't have the, I guess it's a microchip in the key and all that sort of thing, your car's not going to start. So you need a key. Number three was jewellery, which probably, again, fairly obvious. Number four, laptops or tablets. So again, quick buck for on selling a laptop and tablet at the local pub or something. And mobiles was actually number six. Number five was a surprising one that I, now that I think about it, it makes sense, but it was passports.
Oh, yeah, to create their own accounts and all. Yeah, wouldn't have thought of that.
Identity theft, basically. So passports. Yeah, that pricked my curiosity, the passports one, because I probably would never have guessed that in about 12 or 20 guesses, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't have got that one either. But when you mention it, I mean, it's a way of getting 100 points at the bank and all that sort of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, you see, if you watch a lot of those TV shows and movies, they seem to be quite adept at removing the picture of the passport holder and inserting their own picture, and off you go. You've got, as you say, you've got nearly 100 points of identity. So, yeah, was that intrigued my, pricked my curiosity, that particular one.
Oh. All right, Peter, look, I've got a couple of questions that we've had ring-ins, and I won't give you this as homework. I'll ask you them now and get answers from you. Have you ever been asked, or do you often have to go to court over a case? And if so, we don't want to know anything about your cases. I know that that's not the way to go, but we'd like to know what type of case would get a private detective into court.
Yeah, look, I've only been to court, probably 3 times in 30 years, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And on all occasions it was to do with a motor vehicle claim, a stolen motor vehicle, actually I think they were all stolen motor vehicles.
Yeah.
And basically at what you would term as an insurance investigator, I would have taken a statement from the victim and perhaps other witnesses, family members, whatever, and I purely go to court to have that statement adopted into the court documents and perhaps questioned by both sides of the legal argument.
All right. And the other question that we got, believe it or not, they're from two different people, but they're on the same sort of things. When you go into court as a private detective, does your evidence with the judge or magistrate carry any more weight than say, me or somebody else, just Joe Citizen? Or does he automatically say, well, this guy knows the law and he's not going to be here telling a whole lot of porkies, as opposed to, I guess, would he look upon your evidence more credible than say, me in court?
Yeah, look, I would have thought in theory, because you're supposed to be reasonably well trained and adept at what you do.
Yep.
I must admit, though, one of my first court appearance was early days in my career, and on reflection, looking at this statement that I took, it was actually a horrible statement, and I'd left there was some spelling mistakes, and I'd left a lot of follow-up and obvious questions out, because I think I was in about year two of my insurance investigation journey. But funnily enough, I can actually mention this because I'm sure it won't mean too much, but there was a... at the end of the interview, I had a conversation with the insured, as we call them, the person making the claim.
Yep.
And when I got back to my car, as I had been told to do, I actually wrote down what that person said in kind of like point form on the back of an envelope, as you do.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that notation, which of course got adopted into the report, became something really, really important. I still don't know why it was important. And I was standing there getting harangued by his legal representative. And in the end, and fortunately for me, I'd actually kept that piece of paper or that envelope, as it turned out. And I sort of got a bit frustrated and said, "Would you like to see the envelope?"
Yeah.
And of course, that, as it turned out, that was for some reason turned out to be quite important. And I got congratulated and thanked afterwards. And I have no idea how. Why it was important or what it was.
But how lucky you were.
And how lucky I was. But it comes back to procedures, I suppose. So,
Peter, just you've got me a bit intrigued. You're talking about insurance fraud on cars. What sort of things do people try and pull for it to be a fraud case against a motor vehicle?
Oh, a lot of times it's just a numbers game with the insurance company. If you've had your car stolen, the odds are that well, probably not so much recently, but someone would normally come out and see you and run you through a series of questions. And we referred to car keys before as an interesting theft target or burglary target. One of the many things that an insurance company would like to account for is car keys, because if there are some that may or may not be accounted for, well, that can be quite important. And in fact, I can mention about another court case. One of the other times I went to court, again, quite a number of years ago, and it was a Mercedes that was stolen. And at the end of the day, fortunately, with my timeline with the interview, I'd managed to get the period of the theft down to about 15 minutes. Hmm. And the car keys, you know, they claimed that the car keys, you know, remained in their possession at all times, et cetera, et cetera. Only to then the insurance company produced a Mercedes-Benz expert who explained that he couldn't possibly start a car, a Mercedes, without a key inside 20 minutes because you had to disassemble the dash, get in the back, and they actually, the insurance company won, as they more often than not do, based on that gentleman's evidence, but also the fact I'd narrowed the time frame down to about a 15-minute period.
Gee, that was lucky, wasn't it? Well, yeah. No, not lucky. It was good work.
Well, inadvertent, I think you'd say, but, processes.
Peter, I never like to talk about things in my own life on this show because it's all about you. But just very briefly, I had a friend of mine that had a car yard. Oh, this is going back a long, long, long while ago. And it was just two of them, he and his salesman. And one Saturday, the salesman had gone down the road to buy something to eat, and this friend of mine was working in the car yard, showing someone's cars, and some other guy came up and said, "Oh, you know, I'm having a look at this car." And the guy said, "Well, I'll be with you in a few minutes." He said, "Oh, can I take it for a test drive? That's my car there down the road." And they said, "Oh, yeah." So he let him go. And the police, when it never came back, it turned out the car down the road was stolen, so that did nothing. But the insurance wouldn't pay out because they said, "Well, you handed the bloke the keys."
Yeah, so again, it's the wording of the policy, the procedures, and I have actually done a reasonable portion of car yard thefts over the years.
Has there been a few, has there?
Yeah, there was. I'm not sure of the current trend, but yeah, definitely there's been thefts from car yards, whether they be overnight or just, you know, smash and grabs or break-ins or whatever, or people operating along the lines you've just mentioned, producing a false, you know, ID, a false driver's license, and taking it for a test drive. But I think car dealers are a lot smarter than that now, and they probably read people reasonably well.
Well, and I know, I mean, I just had my car serviced yesterday, and they loaned me a service car to go home. But they had to not only serve my license, but they had to take a photocopy of the license. So I guess they're not going to let you take a car out like they did in the old days and take a test drive in it without at least having your license, are they?
Yeah, exactly. And look, you put what we call the point car, which is the car in the car yard overnight that's blocking sort of every other car. Well, that tends to be your crappiest car because that's...
no one's going to want to take.
Well, A, it's that, and B, it's the one most likely to get damaged. So,
Peter, you'd like to, from Absolute Facts, Peter's in to tell us what's going on. Peter, you'd like to quickly talk about the road toll.
Yeah, well, Victoria Police certainly want to talk about the road toll. They put up a post, I think it's about 3 days ago now, saying that whilst last year was a devastating year on the roads, this year is shaping up to be worse. And the numbers were that at the time of writing, which would have been late February, 46 lives lost already on Victoria roads in 2022. And at the same time the previous year in 2021, it was only 29.
And one year we got the money for around 100, didn't we, for the whole year?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that, but we have touched on this sort of pandemic driving brain phenomenon, which I think I must admit I'm experiencing a bit of that out on the roads too. There just seems to be, I'm not sure, just attitudes seem to be a bit more aggressive than what I recall when we sort of stopped driving so much.
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
No.
Peter, you've got a quirky fact for us before I give you a something to go and think about for next month for us, please.
Look, something totally irrelevant but a bit of lightheartedness was that Australia is wider than the moon.
Is it?
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
No, neither did I.
Yeah.
Peter, we've had a question and we don't want to delve into your cases. We understand that. But somebody has asked us to ask you what your best decision was about a case. Now, it'll take a while because you think back what a defining moment in a case where perhaps the case was going really bad and all of a sudden you made a decision and it turned out to be the best decision of your cases.
Yeah, there's a couple that come to mind.
Yeah, well, don't tell us now.
Okay, I've got it. That's homework.
Yeah, that's homework. We want you because it's not just it may be something that while it's just coming to mind now, you may find that there's something an obscure one that you think, yeah, they just, as I've said to you before, most of us only see the private eye on the TV. It's all flashy stuff, the blonde, the flashy sports car, and I know you've got all that, but...
yeah, in the dreams.
No, and so our audience are trying to get to know a bit about what we know the basics of what you do as a job, but it isn't all just following people around, I'll bet. And the person said there must be at least one or two cases where it wasn't looking good, Peter didn't know what to do, and all of a sudden he had this defining moment and he thought, that's it. And you went for it and it cracked your case.
Yeah, look, most definitely. And I think we touched on this way, way early on when we first spoke, that there is definitely an element of luck.
Yep.
And certainly an element of patience involved. So, yep. So they can come together at any moment and things can come together very quickly after perhaps some frustrations along the way. So that's both in the private world and also in the corporate world as well. So,
Peter, I'll ask you this one, and not necessarily to go home and work about it. Have you ever had a case where you just thought, I just can't work this out? I guess this is part of your homework though, and where all of a sudden you just thought, I don't know why I didn't see that all along. There must have happened occasionally too.
Oh, absolutely. You're looking at a fixed point quite often for a number of hours.
Yep.
And you might be missing something that's happening around the back. So absolutely. Always check either on perhaps Mr. Google or do a drive around the block yourself, because there could be a back gate, or some people have garages off laneways, which is a nightmare for our purposes. You've got to think laterally quite often.
Peter, it's nearly time for us to go, because I've got to get out the studio to let Greg in. But just a quick one, and it's probably a bit hard to throw it at you at a moment's notice, but what would be the longest time you spend on a case, Peter? Have you had one that's gone on for months, or are they normally quick, sharp and finished?
Oh, definitely not. Some of the corporate cases just keep coming around and around and around. We go around in a bit of a cycle. So on that basis, I think there's a few people that I've known or worked on over a probably 20-year period.
All right. What about, I know you were talking last time about divorce, where you followed the guy and he was down at a restaurant with another woman and you just rang him and that was it. So would the divorce ones that you're talking about, would they be some of the shortest, or would some of those be long as well?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose there's a budgetary limitation with a lot of those as well. So hopefully there's an answer within perhaps two or three outings. It never works like the TVs and the movies, where it all gets wrapped up in 45 minutes. So, look, I think on average probably it would be the second or third outing that would get you your answer. Some people are lucky it all happens in the first one. But I think you need to put the expectation in your client that it's not going to work. You know, you might miss a set of lights, or they'll drive like an idiot or something and you can't keep up with them. So, yeah, about two or three times. Yep. But having said that, and I think I mentioned this before too, I do get a lot of repeat business. So the same people will ring me back three or four years down the track, and basically those famous words, "That bastard's at it again."
Yeah, terrible. Peter, look, I'm really grateful for you to coming on again. We'll look forward to seeing you the first Wednesday of March.